Hi, everybody. Happy Wednesday. I'm your host, Pam Steck, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm so happy to be back on the air. I've been away, and I've missed all of you. Fortunately, tonight, one of my favorite writers is with me. Last December, Authors on the Air awarded its Books of the Year for various categories. Joe Clifford, who is just a tremendous writing talent, split his award with Terrence McCauley, but his book that won was called Lamentation. It is about two brothers, one with one type of a problem and one with the other. His new book, December Boys, is the second in the Jay Porter series. To tell you that this book is getting rave reviews, I'm not kidding. Publishers Weekly said Clifford has written a very human tale of redemption. I want to correct them and say, no, he's written just a magnificent piece of literary fiction. But it is true. It is somewhat a tale of redemption. He's also gotten rave reviews from Sarah J. Henry, who is an award-winning author of A Cold and Lonely Place, from Alan Leveroni, who's a New York Times bestselling author, from Joshua Moore, author of All This Life, from James W. Hall, who you know is my literary hero. He's won an Edgar and a Seamus for his Thorn series and The Big Finish, and Jenny Milchman, USA Today bestselling author, Mary Higgins Clark Award winner of As Nights Fall, says Jay Porter is a character who will break your heart, and Joe Clifford, a writer capable of doing the same. Along the way, he'll also thrill you, make you angry, cause you to cheer. No mean trio to pull off. December Boys is a timely, topical tale of broken people who come back swinging, achieving the kind of partial triumphs and halfway heartaches only real life and the best writing can depict. It is an honor for me and a great pleasure to welcome back to Authors on the Air my friend Joe Clifford. Joe, welcome back to Authors on the Air. Congratulations on a stunning, successful follow-up book.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me back.
I'm always glad to have you here, always. You know, I was very pleased and honored that you gave me the book so early to read, and I have to tell you that as much as I love Lamentation, I think I love December Boys more. And the reason being is because, boy, talk about a really deep character study. The story that you told in Lamentation about Jay Porter and his drug-addicted brother was really a terrific story. It just wove in so many different facets of the brothers' personalities, and then there was the mystery also, and it was wonderful. This story, even though it's a kind of the next book in line, is just brilliant. Please tell our listeners a little bit about December Boys.
Well, it's the first book, Lamentations, about Chris, the drug-addicted brother. The follow-up, December Boys, is Jay's story. Jay Porter is the protagonist of Lamentation. This time around, it's the focus is more on him and the after effects of dealing with the fallout from what happened in the first book. I got to get, you know, Jay's inner life a little more, see Jay's struggling with. So it's kind of the flip side. It's a standalone, and you don't need to read the first book to read the second one, but there's also this idea that they are intricately, related, and it's kind of like a flip side of the same, story. It continues Lamentation in a lot of ways, whereas I just finished the third one in the series, A Cold Hills, that is, that's more independent, I think, than the first two. The first two really are pretty symbiotic.
Do you anticipate making Jay Porter a series character? Are you looking only to a trilogy? Or do you even know yet?
Yeah, I mean, I know we haven't signed the contract yet, but I know that Ocean View wants some more Jay Porter story. So right now we're looking at releasing one a year through almost 2020, which is pretty strange.
Oh, that's a long contract.
Like I was,
sure.
Well, I remember the Jim Hall interview you did where he was talking about doing Thorn,
right,
and 17 books, and just shock it was like you never set out to imagine. But I see the appeal, as I keep writing these, I can understand why. I just did a guest blog for Elizabeth A. White's site the other day, talking about the joy of doing a series. And part of it is you know the character so well that each time it's like putting on, cliches aside, putting on a pair of shoes or a well-worn coat or anything that fits you.
Sure.
You just know the character, you know what he thinks, and it's in that last draft fairly quickly. I was writing two books at the same time, and one of the two books was much harder because it was a standalone, it was completely independent, new characters, and once I got to, be Jay again, it came together pretty quickly.
You were really enthusiastic about writing this book, too. I remember when you first started it. Did you have to go to a different place in your writer's mind to tell this story versus the Lamentation story?
I was resistant to do the second book for one reason only, and that's that at the end of Lamentation, I give Jay a little bit of peace, a little bit of hope. And I knew to go back in and to write a sequel or to keep the series going, the first thing I was going to have to do is disrupt that tranquility. And you get attached to these characters. It's goofy, but it's true. You spend so much time with them, in a way they're your friends and they're, your family. And I liked giving Jay a little bit of hope at the end, but I knew to tell his story, the arc for a series character is much different than the arc for a single book. So you got to look at it in two ways. You look at, the story, the arc of the story, the mystery's got to be contained in that unit. But, in order to keep the series going, you need to have, a much longer, broader, wider path for your protagonist, which I did, And so I messed up Jay's life and gave him some more trouble and a much harder road. Once I got past that, I was very excited to get back in there. I had the story and I knew what I wanted to tell, and I knew that I wanted to focus on Jay.
Considering Jay's profession and what his experiences are, is there enough material to write a book, one book a year, for the next 4 years?
I wouldn't have thought so, but really, writing is this wonderful, wacky thing that happens. The more you write, the more you can write. It's almost like running. I can't run anymore because of my hip, but those
right.
first few steps aren't exactly easy, but the more you do it and you stretch out and you start going and you start out, you can barely finish half a mile and run 13. You just keep going because it stretches out, and that's the same thing with writing. And the more I explore Jay and his life and what happened to him and the various facets of troubles and tribulations, and more avenues open up, more doors open up, and I can explore more areas. And he's a very rounded character. He's a very real character to me. He's based in part on my half-brother, Jay Streeter. But, the more I write him, I think, the more I realize that he's me. I mean, he has the same anxiety disorders I have, and I've got a bunch of them. His profession and his voice, he's working as an insurance investigator, and I don't think it's giving anything away to say that doesn't work out. And returning him to the world of antiques and estate clearing, it's an interesting way to tell a story. There's something that happens when you live as a scavenger, and that's what Jay is. He's a scavenger. He finds junk, he finds treasures in the junk.
Sure.
And there's something that happens there that's a different way of telling an investigative story. When you're not using a professional investigator, of course, you have to have – first question you have to ask and answer is why is your hero taking on this case? So that's always going to be an issue because he's not, a cop. But,
right.
Living in that world, it gets in the oddities and these odds and ends of a life, leaves a lot of threads that give an opportunity to, have some mystery.
Besides writing, you're also doing you're teaching classes, aren't you?
I teach and edit and write. I think there's a wonderful three-headed monster that they feed off of each other. To be the best in any one of them, you need to do well. I mean, just for me personally, I find the editing, my writing better, and my teaching better, and vice versa, the teaching and the writing. I'm teaching. I just taught a class at Lit Reactor. I'll be teaching another class in the fall. I do some conferences. I'll be teaching at a conference in Texas next January. I do those things, writing, editing, and teaching.
And you're still running Gutter Books, correct?
I'm doing Gutter Books. I stepped from doing the Flash Fiction Offensive, which I left in the very capable hands of Tom Pitts and the new guy, Hector who may or may not be writing me on Facebook to say, not to mention his name, as we did last time when I was talking to Tom. He's a great guy. I went to school with him down in FIU, Florida International. We just were over in Miami. And they're going to be doing the magazine. I just don't have the time to do. I do the reading series, Lip Service West, and I'm editing the book now, Full Gutter Books, Mike Creedon's All Your Lies Came True. I'm going to be doing the Johnny Cash anthology. We did the Show in the Heartland. And, of course, you know, when you have a book through a year, I try to do two a year. And so far I've just been getting the one published, but I'm pretty optimistic about this, the latest thing I've done. But, a couple books a year, that keeps you pretty busy. And I got, the kid, I got one sick with an ear infection. My wife's going away on a camping trip. I got the other one who's five and has the energy of a five-year-old. So I'm pretty busy,
You are indeed. I know that George Fong was published by Gutter Books, wasn't he, Fragmented?
He was. Delightful man.
Is he ever going to write another?
Great guy.
He's wonderful. He is wonderful. Is he ever going to write another
one? He did write another one. In fact, he wrote it, and I just finished the not for Gutter Books, but I helped him with some editing, and I can say I've read it, and it's better than the first, and it's a great thriller, and I hope that he's with our agency, Kimberly Camp, up in Tiburon, and I'm hoping Kimberly will sell that soon, and the world can see it.
Oh, man, I can't wait, because I thought for a debut novel that book was stunning, and I couldn't wait to talk to him, and he really is a very, very nice man, very nice man.
He's a sweetheart of a guy.
So,
really nice guy.
Yeah, he is. So now you're writing your book, you're doing Lit Reactor, you're teaching, you're editing, you're keeping an eye on Gutter Books, you do all the cooking in your household, you have two very active little boys, and you spoil Justin. Pardon, and shopping and everything else. You do it all. You're the perfect wife. You're the perfect wife.
My father said that to me when I was a kid. One of the lasting scars he left me before he left this world, which I will talk to Dr. Goldberg about this coming Monday. Dr. Goldberg's quitting on me. He's leaving at the end of the year, which is fucked up.
Oh, no.
You can't be a psychiatrist and retire. He's like 85. I've heard all those stories like 78 times. But still, it's a comfort. And I have Dr. Goldberg every week. I'm like, I have abandonment issues, man. You can't just quit patients like that. He is. He's 85. So.
He's hanging on to his leg when they're trying to bury him. Jeez, Bill, get the guy a break.
They're like, I'll check out your blog. I'm going to check out your blog. I'm like, Doc, you might want to hurry on that. You might want to get going because, you might want to not put things off so long. So
I want to just take a second here and tell everyone, I'm going to give you a copy of December Boys to the first person who calls in to say hi to Joe. The number is 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. Don't make him wait too long. He's got bad allergies and he doesn't want to talk to me that long. So there you go.
Fucking cat, man.
This year, BoucherCon, it's going to be weirder and wilder than next year than last year. So, but do you have a book up? Is there a book in the mix for you?
No, this is the 1 year. Like I said, for the next 5 years, I should be having one come out. Next 4 years, but this year I will. I'm not there, so I'll be there in support of Brian Panowich's Bull Mountain, Rob Hart's New York.
Absolutely.
There's a ton of good books. I can't name them all, but
I know.
I think of them right now. But yeah,
I am very happy to see the lineup of nominees this year because, generally you see all this old school stuff, and I know a lot of people vote by name recognition, and they shouldn't, because some of the authors that you've introduced me to and Tom has introduced me to are some of the best writing I've ever seen. It really is. It's terrific. How often do authors ask you to mentor them, Joe?
I don't know if anybody uses the word mentor. Isn't that like a Seinfeld episode?
I never saw the show ever in my life.
Have you never seen Seinfeld? Peter Melman. I'll ask Peter Melman. He reads for us. He's going to read for us. So I'll ask him. But I think there's an episode, a mentor episode, and Jerry can't sleep with the woman because Tanya was her mentor. I think that's the episode. Anyway, I don't think people use the word mentor. What happens though is I think we still have this system of apprentice and master, you know, kind of goofy in Games of Thrones-ish. But I think that's what happens. And I certainly had people who took me under their wing, you know, David Corbett and Alan Kaufman,
right.
You know, Jim Hall and Les Standiford and Barrett. And what you do is you pay it forward. You move on a little bit and you've
right.
gotten a pretentious sort of, I know more than you do. But there are a lot of tricks to this writing, especially not even the writing part, but just navigating, you know, agents and public, but also the writing. I mean, there's you know, you say it in words and you learn, you know, there's mistakes we all make. Mistakes is harsh, but it is. It's true. We all make mistakes, and we will say things. The biggest mistake, I think, is that we use too many words to say what we can say in much fewer. So
that's
one of the things,
Elmore,
you know,
Leonard said it very succinctly, right? Elmore Leonard knew what he was talking about. Don't write stuff they don't want to read. Pretty much, right?
Yeah, try to skip the boring parts. But even, you know, just in terms of language, if you can say something in 10 words instead of 11, you say it in 10. And,
right.
You know, we all start writing because we love language and love the sound of words. And when you start writing, you realize that part of it is way down the list. I mean, there's, you know, that you couldn't be Dickens now and write what Dickens wrote. You just couldn't. It's bloated.
Right.
It meanders.
Right.
It's all over the place. You
right.
couldn't get away with that now. I'm not knocking Dickens. I don't like the guy. But I don't know him personally, and, you know, it's not my thing. But still, you couldn't get away with that kind of language. You just couldn't.
No, it's true.
And
it's true.
Or maybe you could. Maybe, you know, David Foster Wallace, I don't know what he even did. I mean, I know he did. I never actually read one of his books. I don't know if he's actually read one of his books. But there are certainly people who don't write, you know, a very short, succinct. I'm not saying everything has to be this, you know, Hemingway kind of style. But there are things you used to be able to do. You know, when there were less books and less things demanding your attention, you know, there wasn't the internet, there wasn't this 15 minutes of gratification hanging over your head, and you just don't have the leeway to, you know, pass
right.
around and go all over the place. You kind of have to get to the story a little faster. But
right.
yeah, I mean, these are all, you know, these are, writing's always evolving. It's an ongoing dialogue, and you have people who are passing down what they learned, and then you pass down what you learned, and everyone's part of this big collective, and it sounds kind of goofy and kind of hippie, and I don't like hippies, but there is this sense of a collective when it comes to writing, and for better or worse.
Let's
and
take a call.
In it and,
Let's take a call. See who's calling. They've disguised their number, so I don't know who it is. Hi, you're live. Who's this?
This is Matt.
You're live on the. Hey, Matt. say hi to Joe. I know you guys know each other. Matt Coyle, say hi to Joe Clifford.
Hey,
Joe. It's Matt Coyle.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Matt. What's up?
Hey, I got a free book, right?
You do?
Yes, no, you just have
the only reason he's calling. He does this to me. Joe, let me just tell you that Matt does this to me when I'm giving away books. He'll call and say, hey, Pam, how's it going? And I go, fine. He goes, you're giving away a book, right? And I say, yeah. And he goes, okay, thanks. See you later. And that'll be about
right.
it.
I gotta go.
All right.
See? I love
you set
it.
Yourself up. You said you call in. You get a book. You be called in. You play by the rules.
I don't.
Listen,
hey, they're not my books. They're yours.
The
you should
house.
Be happy.
Well, we're at the same house. We're both at Ocean View. So it's been really nice. I mean, I can only take the credit for getting nominated one year, but I think every year he's nominated for an Anthony for a different book. Like he's. So it's nice, you know, to have that kind of, you know, recognition for Ocean View.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Come on now.
Hey, so, Joe, I think we first met at VoucherCon in Albany. And I remember talking
yeah.
to you.
Lovely Albany.
I said, we were talking about writing and how much we liked it when we were done. And I wanted to ask you if it's gotten any easier with all the books you've been writing now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the case. You know, writers like writing, they like having there's a stage of writing, and it's been a great few weeks for me because I was finishing two books at the same time. So I just finished wrapping up one. I had to go right back into the new quarter and kind of wrap that up. And it's the end game series, you know, end game where you're at the 90%, 95%, where you're really just fixing the syntax. And that part of writing I really enjoy. You get your coffee, you put your feet up. You know, it's a different kind of writing than the first draft, which is I find excruciating. But there are people who love first drafts. I can't stand writing them. It has to reach a certain point where I knew if I were to die tragically, someone would find my manuscript. I would be horrified in the afterlife, and I don't know what mark that is. But it happens, you know, towards the end. And so I wouldn't say easier. It's just I'm not as worried. You know, like I said, that someone's going to find my unpublished manuscripts, which can be pretty. The early drafts are just, they're fucking terrible. I mean, they're awful. And I know Anna Lamott has the shitty first drafts, and a lot of people will say that happens to them too. But I mean, they're dreadful. I mean, you write it and you're like, holy shit, what am I doing? I'm a phony. I'm a fraud. Who's going to read this crap? And then you go on, you know, you start patting yourself on the back, and I go, wow, I'm pretty good. And I like that part. You know, the pretty good part.
Sounds familiar.
Too funny. Yeah. Matt, you've been on the show, you know, as a guest yourself. Do you feel the same way when you're writing?
Yes, I do.
Do you really?
I feel. Yeah, when you're reading as you're going the first draft, and you just, especially after you had a book or two out, and you think, well, I must know what I'm doing, and then you're reading it and you go, well, this is crap. I don't know what I'm doing. I should be getting better. But
oh, geez.
I think that once you set it aside, you read through, and you go, hey, it's not that bad, and then you revise, and you go, well, you know, maybe I can't do this again.
Do you think it's like that the more books you write? Is it always going to be like that? Even if you write 10 or 20 books, do you think it's always going to be like that?
I hope not.
I imagine so.
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's ask Jim Hall. He was 17 of them. Not the same guy, so.
Anyway, Joe and Pam, I will see you in VoucherCon in New Orleans.
You absolutely will.
I'll see you there.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Matt. Have a great
evening. I'll buy Joe's book at VoucherCon. You don't have to send it to me. I'll do it anyway.
All right.
I'll send you one.
Right.
I have extras. Don't worry about it. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, thanks.
Bye, Matt.
Bye.
That's funny. Matt's a great guy. He's been on the show, and he says the same thing. It just doesn't seem to get any easier, and I'm always just curious where, you know, someone like you, who you've written quite a few books, you've edited a lot of them, you've put together anthologies. I mean, where do you get your ideas for stories? How can, you know, is like just like this little machine that keeps churning out ideas? Or do you really have to work for those ideas to come out?
That part is easier. The ideas part is easier. I remember being in when I was going back to school, when I got off the streets and I was going back to school, and I told one of my professors, Dave Capella, I said, I want to write a book. I said, but I don't know what to write about. He said, what are you talking about? There's so much to write, but I couldn't think of, like, how do you put that in a story? Like, you have a guy, and he wakes up, and then this thing happens, and then, so I think that part didn't click until I went to FIU, and Lynn Barrett got a hold of my literary fiction, which was really just a couple guys sitting around talking for, you know, 180,000 pages, and she's like, you know, this reads like noir. Wow, that's kind of surprising, because that's what I read, and she was like, well, no shit, that's how it works. And once I had the framework of noir or mystery or thriller or genre where, you know, I could get away from, you know, the pretty language, that's what I wanted to be. I mean, I really secretly wanted to be a poet, which is a horrible thing to admit, but, you know, it's true. I wanted to be a poet. That's what I wanted to
Were you trying to follow flow. In? You were trying to follow into Jim Hall's footsteps. He wanted to be a poet, too. Well, first he wanted to be a preacher. Did you know that?
I did not know that, but I didn't really want to be a poet. Like, I mean, that, I can't, I mean, what's worse than being a poet? That's like, fucking, geez, I'm a poet. But I mean, that's the part of writing I like, is that, you know, the language of it. And once Lynn got me to focus more on the story, it got me out of my head, and it made me realize that when I read a book, and I like to read a book, a Gone Girl or a Girl on the Train, you know, I like the language, but really I'm reading to find out what happens next. And I think most people do. There's very few books, Lynn saying this, that can pull you along with just the strength of the language. I mean, I guess James Joyce can do it, but I couldn't tell you James Joyce plot of my life depended on
it. You know who I used
I know
to Arabic do
was
it,
really
though.
Well written, story.
But I think Conway used to, Conway used to do that to me. And when he would write, his Southern style of writing was almost poetic, I believe. But, we lost a great...
I mean, that's why, you know.
Yeah. I know, he's... Well, didn't you name your son after him, actually? Your son after... Your second son? Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
He's sick right now. Little guy.
Aw. Poor little thing.
Oh, it's awful.
If it's, you know, not one thing, it's another, right? So what's next for you? What's next on your to-do list, Joe?
Well, you know, I'm waiting to formally announce this, the two books we sold with, we sold to Ocean View, but I'm just going to sign the contract. But that, you know, we got two more Jay Porters that should be in the books. You know, I'm going to try to get this new standalone, which I'm jumping around with titles of it, but it's about a girl who was abducted, escaped an abduction, goes back to her hometown where a bigger abduction sort of overshadowed her troubles. And I'm really excited about that. You know, it's a different kind of book than I've done before. I know Liz, my agent's excited about that. But, you know, having a book a year, I mean, I know what I'll be doing for the next 3 years. I'll be writing Jay Porter, and I'll be going on tours and going to conferences and VoucherCon. And, you know, there's no shortage of things to do.
There you go. Well, I'm really glad that you came on the show tonight. And as I've said before to the people who are listening, hold on. I'm messaging Joe, but he's either ignoring my mockery or he's too afraid to look. Well, call in, Pitts. I mean, you know, sending me a message isn't doing anything. Jeez. Call in. He's ignoring you. It's obvious.
He says, tell them the truth. Oh, I think he said writing is stupid. That's our at least once a week, one of us will type the other one writing is stupid. His writing is stupid. I was driving around with Holden today, and Holden's my 5-year-old son, who I named after my other favorite writer. You're driving around, and you're talking about money, and he was like, he's doing this thing, like, I want more money, because I know I get more money, I can write. And he starts to laugh so hard, which was just really funny being mocked by my 5-year-old son, who recognized the futility of a career in writing already.
Holden's a very perceptive little boy, though. You tell a lot of stories about him. He's quite a profound thinker for 5 years old.
Yeah, he picks up on stuff. He's a very manipulative little child. He really is.
Kids are.
He's especially good at it. I mean, he's either be a lawyer or a criminal, or I guess that's the same thing. Writing is—you have to do it because it's something you need to do, right? I mean, it's this inner drive to create. Otherwise, why would you sit and do it? Because when you start doing it, that's when it's fun, right? When you're sitting down, like when you're sitting, I'm going to write and just write all feelings. But that's not writing. That's your thing. That's when you do it for a career and you have audience and agents and publishers and readers and, you know, there's more importantly, there's a genre that demands, whatever the genre is, that demands you play these certain set of rules. You can bend, you can break, and you can go this way or that way, but you still have to give, there's still an expectation you have to meet as a writer. And it becomes work.
Right.
I mean, it's a job. And that's why they call it a job. Not, I mean, it's working in a factory. I worked in a factory. It's way better than working in a factory, but still to do it, you know, it's work. And there are good days and bad days. And there are plenty of days where writing is stupid. Plenty of days.
Easier. Does it ever feel not like a job?
Yeah, if I get constant praise, never ending praise from strangers, from sun up to sundown, and how awesome I am. It's easier. That if I get those days, like, you know, there was one day like where I got the Anthony nomination, and I think we sold the book, and like Liz wrote me telling me how great I was, and my wife, and I just had like praise for like 3 hours. It was fucking awesome. I felt like a fully functioning, rounded human being. And then the
you
second
you need to go
that,
back
ended,
to your
you know,
shrink and find
up.
Another one. You know, you got
to
go find a new shrink.
I've been on vacation for 2 weeks. No, there's a reason I did heroin, right? I mean, you know, you're not going to find many heroin addicts who are like, oh no, I'm all put together on the inside, and I don't need constant outside validation. That's why you do drugs, because it fixes the problem. In a lot of ways, even when you stop doing the drugs, a lot of those problems still linger. And certainly writing feeds that to a certain degree. I mean, school did. When I went to school, I got A's, and you know, that little pleasure center, you know, goes off in your brain. I mean,
you really enjoyed school, didn't you?
Yeah,
it was one
place you can go when you have a background like I had, which was, you know, it's pretty, I wasn't wearing shoes and you're living under bridges and all that crap. And then you go back to school and you're like, wow, you got stories, you know, and they embrace this life experience with the people in school. You know, they go right from high school into college. So, I mean, I was also like 34, which is pretty embarrassing. But, I could be who I was and I got to pour my passion into something productive. And it's a nice feeling when you've been fucking up for so long to, you know, to be, you know, to be other side and be doing something good.
Good grief. I'll send you a PM every day and tell you how wonderful you are, okay? We'll just have everybody on Authors on the Air send you a note every single day and say, so Clifford, you hang me, babe.
I mean, it's
terrible.
I think it's just part of getting older, you know, the parts of that go away, and not nearly as desperate maybe as you are at 20, but that's, you know, when you do drugs, it kind of stops maturity-wise wherever you start doing the drugs. So in a lot of ways, you know, cause I did drugs for 10 years, so that's why Jay Porter's 35, because that's about my maturity level. And I'll have people, you know, remark frequently how I take fights I've had with Justine, my wife, and I put them into the book, and I'm always amazed when people are like, man, that guy's a jerk, because, you know, I mean, Jay has his problems, and I know Jay pretty well, because I have a lot of the same problems. You know, you get a chance to you know, mine the depths of, you know, character defect, which is, it's either this or AA, and I'm not going to an AA meeting because I just can't stand that stuff.
Good for you. I can't. You know, I've never had to go personally, but good for you.
It's great. It works for a lot of people. But I remember Dan Wakefield saying, a buddy of his told him how, you know, he had to stop drinking. You have to go to those fucking meetings. And I know they work and they're great for a lot of people. I'm not a people person, and I've gone to enough.
Well, you're basically kind of shy. As much as I was very surprised to find that out about you when we met in North Carolina, you are rather shy, and that was surprising, but a good guy.
Yeah.
I think you're a good guy, and a very talented writer.
It's debatable. You can ask my ex-wife. I don't know.
She doesn't
clap
anymore. I tried.
She's
an
ex. I like the first one.
Right? You got to give one this time.
Fun.
All right.
Yeah. No,
thank you
great.
So much,
yeah.
Joe Clifford, for being with me tonight on Authors on the Air. I wish you all the best with December Boys. It's a brilliant, brilliant tale. Thank you so much. And I'll send Matt Coyle his copy. And come back again.
Okay.
I'll see you soon. I'll see you in September anyway, right?
Yeah. I'll be in Belgium. I'll be in New Orleans.
Right.
It'll be a fun time.
All right. It'll be fun.
Right,
thanks
care,
an awful
thanks.
Lot, Joe.
Right.
Joe Clifford, author of Lamentation and December Boys. Going to take care of his sick son and his allergy-ridden self. Next Friday, I'll be talking to Scott Alderberg. I hope that you join me. I love all these neo-noir writers. Their work is spectacular. And I've missed all you guys, so I'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Have a really great evening. And thank you, Mom and Dad.